I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. A lot of the entertainment we take in, especially television, we may view as an escape from the political issues that we grapple with when watching the news or making choices at the ballot box. But Anthony Grzynski says the fictional stories we view in TV and movies or read in books may have more of an effect on our views than we think. And that's true even or especially when the content may seem trivial or innocuous. Grzynski, who goes by Jack, is the chair of the political science department at UVM. He wrote a whole book a few years back about how reading Harry Potter may have shaped a generation's politics. Now he has a new book out that builds on that idea and looks at how TV shows like Game of Thrones and House of Cards and some specific issues like how the way villains are portrayed may shape how we think about things like leadership, identity, and criminal justice. The new book is called The Political Effects of Entertainment Media, How Fictional Worlds Affect Real-World Political Perspectives. Professor Grzynski, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Well, thanks for having me back.
You know, it makes sense to think that our entertainment media, so books and TV and movies and radio programs, are all shaped by our culture and the political moment we find ourselves in. And then, you know, it goes the other way too, of course. We're shaped by what we see. We're shaped by what we read. But you look at some very sort of specific ways that the entertainment media we consume affects how we think about specific political issues. Can you give us your overarching idea here? And then we'll really debate it.
Well, the specific ways are part of a series of studies that fit into the bigger picture of this argument where if you map out the people's environment of political messages, that there are plenty of political messages that come from entertainment as well as from informational sources or public affairs coverage. And the specific ways that tackled in the different studies included things like the way fiction might affect your belief in a just world. And political scientists and psychologists have shown that that belief, if you believe the world's just, that good things happen to good people, bad things happen to bad people, that's going to have an impact on your politics in other ways, your support for government programs or so on. Another specific way, so that was the focus of one study, and we focused on Game of Thrones as being a good example of a popular television program that really contradicted the trend in the rest of fiction, the happy ending, that instead in Game of Thrones, it's brutally in your face again and again and again, injustice after injustice.
And so, being a good person doesn't mean that you'll be immune to something terrible happening.
No, and it could make you a fool as well, such as Sean Bean's character, Ned Stark. So
if I am an avid consumer of Game of Thrones, if that is like my binge watching favorite and I've seen it three times, am I now a person who doesn't believe in a just world? I mean, is it that sort of mind warping?
No, that gives it a little too much power. It would be, the repeated exposure to that. And if then you watch other programs or read other books that have the similar line of or lessons about, how you act in the world, that those will all then reinforce those effects. But what we showed in the studies was that the exposure, and we did experimental studies in this case as well as surveys, that the exposure does seem to cause a drop in your belief in a just world.
Let's talk about another example, and then we can get into the methodology and some of the other issues here. And you do talk about House of Cards as well, another very popular show in this cultural moment.
Yes. And to set this up a little bit, to put it in the broader context, in the book, I try to map out, look, there are pure entertainment media outlets and there are those that are overtly political. And if you want to look for the places where these programs might have an effect, you have to look beyond the obvious. we're not really cued into all the different ways that our minds operate and how those operations then lead to political beliefs, like the belief in a just world. Most people probably aren't, you know, weren't thinking about that when they're watching Game of Thrones. But in House of Cards, we hypothesize a similar effect on belief in a just world. But also when it comes to overtly political shows, you know, there are other aspects that people may not think of. They may think about the cynicism of the show a little bit, but are people really aware of how repeated exposure to that would really reinforce and strengthen their cynicism about the political world? And we did a counter study, or these are the studies in here. I often use the plural pronoun because these studies I did in collaboration with my students, these were class projects, and then I tell them, you know, if we do a good job, I'll get them published. And this is the fact that they did a good job, and we had some good discussions leading to some good designs, and that ultimately led to some conclusions on these. But the other study that I did with other groups of students focused on The Daily Show and the Colbert Report. And based on other research, it was our hypothesis that the audience of those shows would come away a little more skeptical as opposed to cynical. That a skeptic is a little more optimistic, that you can find the truth that's out there somewhere.
Just like the X-Files.
That's a whole nother subject. Conspiracy theories, yes. But anyway, that, you know, and Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert back in the day modeled a sort of skepticism. They were about getting to the truth. They were not dismissive and cynical about the whole system. Whereas, you know, watching Frank Underwood and Claire Underwood, you get a very different take. And we actually found that in the audiences, that, you know, House of Cards audiences were much more cynical. Daily Show and Colbert Report audiences were more skeptical as opposed to cynical. So it shows up. And you would think people who want to watch political entertainment TV that it's drawing from the same type of audience.
And it is, I mean, in terms of something like the Colbert Report or the Daily Show, I mean, people who choose those programs are probably already thinking about their political persuasion and how they feel about politics. They're probably a more left-leaning audience. We know that it tends to skew younger. So,
although the Colbert Report attracted an awful lot of conservatives, and not because they were duped,
right?
Which some previous research was misinterpreted along those lines, but they just loved hearing someone put forth those positions, and they knew it was all in fun. But you know
your political persuasion when you choose a show like that, and you probably do have that in mind as you're watching it or as you're deciding to choose it. Whereas some of these other things that you're talking about, like Game of Thrones or Harry Potter, which we've talked to you about before, especially, you know, as a 12-year-old, you're not thinking, boy, this might affect how I think about the world around me and specifically my politics. And your parents aren't probably thinking that either when they shove that book in your hands for the first time. So,
yeah, they're just glad you're reading.
Yeah.
I have a 12-year-old. I'm psyched he's reading.
But, you know, you think about how J.K. Rowling might feel to think about a whole generation of young people having their beliefs influenced by the way she portrays the villain Voldemort. You know, that this could have an effect on their idea about criminal justice reform and the death penalty and, you know, other things like Fight Club and The Matrix, which are now sort of these seminal works in the men's rights movement. And you can imagine that this is not necessarily what the authors or creators intended. It sort of feels Orwellian.
Yes, I make the point in this book, as I did in the Harry Potter book. I'm not so concerned, and I'm not blaming the people who write these books or produce these programs that they're doing this intentionally. I think a lot of times they wouldn't even be aware of the effect that it has. They're telling a good story.
Yeah, but now aren't they going to be horrified, potentially?
The audience horrified?
No, authors, the creators. You know, if they read your book and think, oh my gosh, this is not what I meant. You know, I was trying to give a different message.
I don't know.
I really don't know the answer to that question in terms of going down that. I would love to hear from them. A lot of people in Hollywood, some people dismiss the power of storytelling, which just blows my mind that you're telling stories. They have an effect. Come on. It's well documented. They have effects in other areas, like whether you smoke or things along those lines. And what we're showing here is it has an effect on your politics as well. So the scenes of torture, for example, I remember... the discussion around the Academy Award winning film on the killing of Bin Laden. That there was this concern that the torture scene was not realistic because it showed it being effective. And, military interrogators, from everything I've read from good journalist accounts, will say, no, torture doesn't work. But what do we see on entertainment all the time, and it's part of the plot device. The torture the bad guys, you get the good information. The good guys don't give away any information, that sort of thing. And you get that repetition over and over again. And there are so many areas that, and especially in this environment today, and I talk about this in the book, the ratio of entertainment to news is so overwhelmingly in favor of entertainment these days. And on top of it, it's well documented. People are tuning out of the news. But they're still asked for their opinion. They still go vote. They still have opinions. Where do those come from?
John is calling in from Stratford. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Thank you so much, Jane. I think the power of stories and democracy can be seen in that in ancient Athens, our first democracy, citizens were required and paid. All citizens were required and paid to go once a year to see the great dramas, which were stories intended to teach people how to be good citizens. And many of them by Sophocles and Euripides focused on the danger of hubris, the danger of enacting policies out of fear or pity. They were stories that instructed the people of Athens how to make good decisions. And it's really a shame that I think the professor is absolutely right in the power of stories, and it's quite a contrast between how the Athenians viewed the importance of stories and how and value of them and how we look at them today in terms of our democracy.
John, thanks for your comment. I appreciate hearing from you. Jack, are we basically, this applies in so many conversations we have, but have we just sunk? Our political culture is giving us these villains who will show us that we should not have a belief in a just world. We should be cynical about politics. There are so many ways that our entertainment media is already vilified in other ways. Are we not lifting ourselves up and creating democracy or creating a group of people who, regardless of which side they fall on in the political spectrum, are actually optimistic, are civic-minded? Are we sort of just sinking ourselves?
And thanks to John for that comment as well. And actually, in the Game of Thrones chapter, I quote Plato to say, John, you're right on it in terms of, and Plato arguing about what the power of stories are and how they should be crafted. And the interesting thing about that, though, and there's a little twist, and this is in terms of the unintended consequences of the storytelling, the manner of storytelling. And that is, if you, and this is what the findings of Game of Thrones and House of Cards in this book add into another research by a European scholar who found that the happy endings, this more just world script, if you would, the good guy or woman, does the right thing, they get out ahead, that actually builds up a belief in a just world. And whereas, Plato was arguing we want people to believe that, in a way that has negative consequences for politics in ways that he didn't envision. And psychologists have demonstrated through their studies of the belief in a just world that if you think good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people, you're not going to want to do anything to address the problems in our society that pop up. You're going to blame the victims for what happened, basically. And so it has an interesting – and that goes to your point earlier, Jane, that the intent here – good storytelling usually has those, happy endings, the fairy tale happy endings, if you would. But those actually, could be could poison us in a way. Sorry, Don Henley is popping in my head right now.
But now I feel like you can't win. You can't win for trying at this point. It, you know, you're going to give somebody the wrong message, even if it's, you know.
Well, that's where, you know, in our culture becoming more aware of the various influences and sort of a humility, if you would, in terms of where our political beliefs come from, but also about the potential influence of different sources. If you become aware of those sort of things and you turn back towards good journalism, that then you'll have a clearer sense of the world. So that, you know, the just world, I would argue that Game of Thrones is much more in line with reality than the typical storytelling that happens. And actually, the typical happy ending actually has a conservative effect on people because it means you're less likely to support government programs to address societal issues and problems that pop up.
Because good people don't need that kind of
exactly thing. And bad people, well, they must have done something to deserve it, is the kind of the blaming the victim.
We got a note from Frederick who says, fascinating topic. I'm an avid fan of Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life, which has much to say about class, race, and personal ethics. I tend to think my politics have been reinforced and validated by this story rather than the other way around. Is Frederick right?
Well, yes, that's a strong possibility. But the one thing I want to say about reinforcement is, and this is not coming from me, this is coming from other scholars in communications and political science, that, you know, reinforcement actually is really important. If you think you're alone in your beliefs and you don't see anything else to confirm those, there's a possibility those beliefs will change and you're less likely to act on them. There's good research, for example, on conservative talk radio, how that ended up mobilizing conservatives because they found out there were others who believed the same thing. And when they called in, they heard the same sort of comments. And that strengthened their beliefs, made them much more active politically. In the book, I do map out in terms of – I have a pretty complex set of chapters that map out sort of the theory about how and when entertainment media might have an influence and how to, you know, and when you're talking about media effects, it doesn't affect everybody in the same way all the time. And so you have to develop a really complex theory to take into account all the other factors that are involved here, including the context. And so you're socialized in a certain way from your parents. You live in a community that has influences on you. The broader culture has an influence on you. But each generation turns out different from the previous generation. Why does that happen? Part of that is because new thoughts and ideas and perspectives pop up. And sometimes they're carried by entertainment media, and that can lead to change.
How do you, though, then show through your work or surmise that it's not that the media is reflecting what we already think, but more that we're being influenced by what we see? You know, you can certainly look at something like Game of Thrones and say that's so influenced by the moment we're in, or that it has, you know, come and become popular because of the moment we're in, because of this particular cultural and political status that we're in. So it's not that we are being influenced by it. It's here because of our influence or our sort of cultural moment.
But where does that come from in the first place? So, you know, the media is part of the channels of communication and a culture, and it's an instrument of cultural change. And that's how the cultures change. And so, yes, it may pick up on certain threads, but then it spreads those, and that's where it has the influence and moves the culture in a direction that way. And so I think the simple, you know, the notion of simple causality, what came first, is really — it really misses the bigger picture. And there's a scholar named Slater who wrote a piece about reinforcing spirals who makes this argument. It's a seminal piece in communications and media effects literature that argues you've got to look over the long term and how all these things interact over time. It's not at one point one thing affects the other and that's it. And so if you think more along the long-term perspective, you work in the notion of reinforcement, but you also – that model builds in where new ideas can come from. And so the other point on your comment about whether people select it because they believe in it already, well, there's a lot, and I address all these in the book. But we did methodologically a couple of things we did. One is in the survey we asked, well, what got you to watch Game of Thrones? You know, ask people why they got into it. And this was built upon, you know, conversations I have with my students, who, you know, and I talked to them, well, what gets you to watch or do things? It's a, you know, well, the buzz about it. Everybody's talking about it. I want to be part of the conversation. Those reasons are not politically motivated reasons. The other on the methodologies, we use experiments as well as surveys. So we show, at least in a short term, how that can move the needle. If you do an experimental design, you're randomly assigning people to experimental and control groups. So those groups should be equal before the experimental manipulation. The experimental manipulation is, you know, an unjust world show like Game of Thrones versus a more just world show like True Blood was one of our comparisons. And if there's a difference afterwards, it's due to that manipulation. So you've established that there's that causality regardless of self-selection. And then finally, if, you know, if the audience thinks about fiction and how things, the lessons that I talk about in the book and how they're embedded, and most people aren't aware of these sort of lessons or think about them in that way. There's also the aspect that a lot of stories change over time, and they're not necessarily the same that they started out with. The classic is, you know, you watch the original Star Wars. It's so good and evil, boom, so clearly divided. And then by the time the Return of the Jedi comes on, it's, you know, there is still
Darth Vader
some
is a
Darth
more
Vader.
Complex character.
Yeah, exactly. Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, was rated as one of the top shows of TV at the time. And that was a great example. The first year, and this is the culture thing, the first year was in many ways 9/11 in sci-fi, because in the story, if you don't know it, it's set out in space, all these colonies of humans, they create robots, and the robots develop a way, the Cylons develop a way to mimic human beings so they're not distinguishable. They're sleeper cells. And then they attack, and they you know, in a genocide that wipes out the human race on 12 planets except for a handful of humans who escape. And then the story interestingly evolves. That first year, you're like, oh, wipe out the Cylons. They're just robots. They're genocidal robots. And the producers bring you along. So in the fourth year, the main characters are like, no, these are sentient, intelligent beings who deserve respect and tolerance, at least the ones who don't want to kill humans anymore. And so stories have those sort of evolutions that you're not going to be aware of. You get into the story and you're along for the ride.
Let's go to Bruce calling in from Essex. Hi, Bruce. You're on.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi. Jack, thanks for discussing this. I believe you're just, you know, scratching the surface. I'm wondering if you've studied the work of Neil Postman, who back in 1984, I guess, published Amusing Ourselves to Death.
That's an awesome
the role
book.
Of media. Yeah, I mean, it was really a prophet. Mm-hmm. And, of course, a lot of people go to the Orwellian image, but I think he voted for Huxley in that, we were evolving towards a world we were trying to be just drugged by pleasure and easily influenced by these kinds of external media impacts. And it's hard to avoid, as you said. I think Postman said, even if you don't watch television, you're affected by conversations. It's almost like secondhand smoke. You can't escape it.
Good analogy.
In a closed container. So I've just your thoughts on Postman and how that interrelates with this.
Certainly. And thanks so much for bringing that up. There's one book that I've used, and every time I've taught my politics in the media class since 1993, and that's Neil Postman's Amusing Ourselves to Death. He sums it up nicely. We have more to fear from Howdy Doody than from Big Brother. Actually made it into a song by the artist E, too.
And, anyway, of course, he didn't mean Big Brother, the TV show.
No, he did not mean Big Brother, the TV show. The thing about Postman, which is in terms of how that would fit in here, Postman, again, that's a broad cultural effect of the form of media and how it shapes our conversations and discourse. And I think you can see Postman's arguments in The Daily Show and The Colbert Report over and over again. And in fact, Colbert's, when he coined the term, actually is a real term now, truthiness. I don't know why we don't use that as opposed to post-truth. But when he coined that and when he did his word segment, it was so prescient in terms of where we are right now. He was tapping into where the culture is going. And yes, this was something that Postman wrote about back in 1985. In terms of the entertainment side, I think where Postman would fit in is the inability to distinguish, or the change. The cultural change so that basically all our news has become entertainment, if you would. And that in many ways that would help explain why in part people have left news programming and gravitated more towards entertainment. And our inability to really have any sort of rational discourse and understand things like context and inconsistencies or contradictions. And that's all. That's all at the heart of the Daily Show and the Colbert Report. In fact, Postman at the end of his book, right, you know, when he's asked to come up with solutions for the problems he identified, he toyed with the idea of satire shows that showed the inanity of television as a source of information. And he sort of dismissed it, thinking it would be the Saturday Night Live model. But I think if he were around today and he saw, you know, or if he passed away, I think, a decade ago or so, if he saw what Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert did, he might have a different opinion on that, that they had a positive effect of really showing problems in our discourse that then make us more skeptical and more rational, and that they modeled those on their show, unlike the dismissive cynicism of House of Cards.
Let's go to Andy in Montpelier while we're talking about this particular sort of swirling topic. Hi, Andy. You're on the air.
Hi, Andy.
Well, how you doing? I was just wondering if you had done any of the research along with the reality TV aspect of our current administration and where he came from and how, you know, people are voted off the island in previous years, and just if you feel that that's had any influence on today's political environment.
You know, at this point, I'd have to, you know, speculate on that, and I do think you're onto something there. And I guess that gives me a second to step back and put this research and the Harry Potter research in context, because there is, I think, so much out there to explore, such as reality television, more that can be done on crime shows or on a variety of our entertainment, and looking at that and looking at what kind of messages come from those shows, and more importantly to me, what impact they have on people's views about politics. This work, in my mind, is part of a community of scholars and endeavor, political scientists, really focus exclusively on news programming and public affairs programming, and we haven't really taken a look at entertainment media. There were a few exceptions, including one from one of my mentors at the University of Kentucky, where I got my PhD. But so the idea of this book is to really kind of push that area of research and saying to my fellow scholars, you know, here, this is really a fruitful area to look for us to really expand our understanding of people's sources of political perspectives. And, you know, I love writing up sort of the broader theories about how this all fits in. And so there's that part in the front of the book. And then there are these studies. It's like, look, here's the effect of Game of Thrones. Here's the effect of House of Cards. Here's what, you know, different depictions of villains will do to your attitudes about using deadly force or the death penalty. Here's what fictional leaders and the traits they exhibit mean for what traits we think are important in leadership. And then in the conclusion, I do mention, reality TV shows. I mention a number of other avenues you can go. And there's a whole other area that, you know, you could start looking at sports. And clearly there's the overt stuff, the Colin Kaepernick situation. But there are all sorts of other kind of lessons that you learn from sports and the culture of sports and how the team nature of sports if you're into fantasy sports, what that does. There's so many areas. So this is sort of like pushing into a new area of research, and you know, the Harry Potter for me was sort of my beachhead, and this is a book pushing it a little further, and I'm hoping other people take it up. The nice thing about doing this, being the first one in the territory, at least in a while, is I got to focus on a lot of shows that I liked.
Well, speaking of which, I want to ask you about that. I mean, you at least present as a dude. You seem like a guy. So yeah. Is this a very sort of male-oriented, you know, things that you like, things that men like? Every caller we've had, every emailer we've had has been a guy or seems to be a guy.
Well, Battlestar Galactica actually stood out as having a lot of women in the audience. In fact, it's one of the rare sci-fi that there was a balance. I'd love to see the numbers on the new Star Trek. I just started to binge watch that one. and I'm like, wow, this is awesome. You know, and I'm, you know, unfortunately, I've ruined entertainment for myself because I'm always looking for these sort of things. I sort of have to watch a show twice to actually enjoy it. Yeah, that's why in any scientific endeavor, you need lots of different scientists doing different pieces and it all comes together. And so in my mind, this is just a start. There are flaws in a number of these studies and they could be stronger in certain ways. It's hard to really put together, you know, the perfect study in this. But the point is that it's like, here, this is pretty strong evidence something's going on here. And just like with Harry Potter, that was the first piece out there on that. And a lot of people attacked it for saying, oh, well, correlation isn't causation kind of deal. And I knew that. But the idea is you get this out there and then other researchers take it up. And, you know, shortly after that book came out, some European scholars did some experimental studies on Harry Potter and showed provided that causality piece that I needed and reinforced what I found. And then other scholars came along to do pieces on that related to the authoritarian aspect of the Harry Potter, how it reduced authoritarianism among its fans and tied it into support for Donald Trump. And so that's the part of the, you know, you put these pieces out, science is take biting off little pieces at a time, and our knowledge from the science comes from accumulation of those of the evidence. And so I'm confident, and I hope this is the case, that 10 years out there'll be a lot of other pieces that reinforce the findings of these studies and show the importance of entertainment media.
So if you're listening and thinking, okay, well, so how then do I, as a consumer of media, or, you know, maybe I'm a teacher or a parent, so I have an influence over the media that young people consume who are shaping their political beliefs really, you know, as they grow up and as they figure out what their families think, what their friends think. What do you do with this information? I mean, you can't sort of screen for it. It's not something that you're going to know necessarily. Even if you read it, you don't necessarily know or watch it or whatever. So What do we do with this knowledge? I mean, again, we all know we're influenced by what we read and what we see, and of course we're influenced by narrative. But so, what do we now do with the information of how you know, a black and white villain might shape our political beliefs? And what if I still want to read Harry Potter?
You want application of this?
Yes, damn it.
Well, I guess in terms of, I think the just that awareness. Well, then I can't prescribe what people would do with that awareness, but I think that awareness is power in a certain respect, that then they can make their choices in terms of what sort of effect it would have. Yeah, I guess that's the best thing I can do as far as that. If not adequate at all.
Well, I mean, you know, I can imagine, you know, not necessarily a nefarious sense, but I can imagine, you know, people thinking, oh my God, I don't even know how to read a book anymore because now I'm worried that it's going to affect my brain and I don't know how and I'm not thinking about how. And I can imagine, you know, a group of people, whether for nefarious reasons or otherwise, thinking, okay, well, I'm going to apply this by looking at how, you know, the work on, you know, a sort of a sense of a just world might affect someone's political beliefs. And I'm going to write fiction that has that message. I mean, we know that happens. The Population Media Center, based in Vermont, makes soap operas for TV and radio that are designed to promote public health campaigns in the developing world. And they're not doing it by saying, you know, follow this practice of hygiene. They're doing it through drama, the same way you talk about. So we know people will use this in certain ways. So, I mean, can you see that?
Well, they're going to use it. I can definitely see that. And that's where, again, the awareness, I think, is power in this case. I don't think it should spoil your fun of entertainment media. Although one student blamed me for ruining entertainment media for the rest of his life at one point. But I think awareness, you can still be transported by the stories and immersed in the stories without and at the same time be aware of all these factors that influence your views. And it's about being a skeptical consumer of information and beliefs and values wherever they come from.
That is Anthony Grzynski, Jack Grzynski, chair of UVM's Political Science Department and author of the new book, The Political Effects of Entertainment Media, How Fictional Worlds Affect Real World Political Perspectives. Jack, thank you very much for talking with us today. Fascinating to hear your work.
Thank you very much for your interest and the interest of the audience.